welcome to episode 8 of season 5 of the Anna Asks podcast. I'm Anna Cusack, and just like last episode, this is going to be another solo one. Just me talking through, this time, my postpartum preparations. So as a postpartum doula, this is a topic that is very dear to my heart, something I've put a lot of thought and work, effort into, and I'm just going to share with you what I have done so far, and perhaps it will jog my memory of anything else that I need to get ready. So this episode is not one that I'm going to go back and be particularly finicky about editing. I do apologize if there's some extra thinking time, some extra coughing or whatever happens in the background. And I hope that you find some inspiration or information for your own postpartum preparation, for ways that you can help your friends and perhaps your clients too. So before we kick off, I just really want to deeply acknowledge and pay my respects to the Awabakal people on whose lands I live and work and record this podcast and birth, and honor their ongoing connection to land, water and skies, and recognize how their own parenting and motherhood experiences have been irreparably changed and shaped by my ancestors and how that continues to this day. All right, I'm going to use the same kind of questions as I asked to the guests through this series to guide my thought process. So we'll see how we go. So the first question is, how are you approaching birth and postpartum differently this time around compared to with your previous children? So I think the first lead up to birth and postpartum for me was a lot about information gathering and a lot about doing the practical side of things. So things that I did first time around that aren't happening this time are, I went to a wonderful hypnobirthing class, as I spoke about last episode. I did breastfeeding education course with the Australian Breastfeeding Association. And I would really strongly suggest that anybody who wants to breastfeed, chest feed, body feed their baby really take the time during pregnancy to find a course, read the books, make contact with the local lactation support people in your area, because it's not something that's just, you know, it's a process that is a natural process, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it comes naturally. And it can be a really tricky skill to learn, especially when you and your baby are both learning how to do it for the first time. So those kind of things aren't happening so much this time. One thing that is similar is that I had prepared a list of contact people, or saved a whole lot of useful numbers to my phone ahead of time. So I had everything from, like I said, like lactation support people, the midwifery support team through the midwifery group practice that I was a patient of. I had PANDA, Perinatal Anxiety and Depression Australia. I had a hotline in my phone. I had all the kind of crisis support things like Lifeline. I had the number for MotherSafe, which is where you can ring and find out information about whether medications are safe. I had the poisons information line. Like, I had all these things put into my phone ahead of time because I thought, if I'm in a panic, I want to be able to ring them straight away without having to think, who do I call? Where can I find that phone number? So I had them in my phone. I also wrote them on a list and stuck that list to the fridge. This time I've done the same thing. but it's a bit more involved. And a lot of the time I've taken the extra step of actually making contact with particular services ahead of time. So for example, I knew where the pelvic floor physiotherapy place was. I still didn't go there for a 6-week check. I didn't get there until 12 months after my baby was born. So this time I've taken the step of not only writing these people on the list, but actually booking my appointments ahead of time with the timing of when my baby is kind of estimated, expected to arrive. The 6-week kind of appointments, so with GP, with pelvic floor physio, those sorts of things I do kind of around Christmas time. And I know that those time slots can be hard to get a session for. So I have actually booked my pelvic floor physio checkup ahead of time. I've also booked myself an osteopath appointment and made contact with somebody who can come and do some mobile massage after the birth, which is lovely. And also on my contact list this time is other support services that I might not have thought of last time. So now it's my older child's daycare is on there as well. I have the number of Claire from the Nurture Centre there who can kind of be my reference point for any other services that I don't have direct access to. She can steer me in the right direction. I also have the phone number on there for a cleaner because last time we really didn't need that service. I had cooked so much food ahead of time. We also have my parents are local. We had, you know, a good turnover of food happening. And this time, yes, those things will still be occurring. That will still be in place. But my partner who was picking that up and covering the cleaning will now be doing parenting and picking up the food kind of stuff for her, as well as generally for us. There's an extra person in the house. There's more washing. We also have a dog when we didn't have one before. So there's all these extra jobs that he'll be taking on, and I want to make sure that I can have as much recovery time as possible. And so we decided that a fortnightly cleaner just to do the bathrooms properly, to do the floors, and to do a once over on the kitchen was a really good investment for us. So we're doing that. We've also, last time we looked at him having as much leave as possible. And the way that it worked at that point was that he was able to get a little bit more time off by taking it at half pay and spread that across extra weeks. And then there was also 10 days or 2 working weeks of Centrelink partner pay that he was eligible for. And we decided to use that at a later time of the year. This time we're just going like, no, there's another child in the picture. We're going to use it all as much as we can from the get-go. And that feels really supportive to me. I can't think how I would possibly get us all out of the door, even on a day that was one of her kindy days, to get her there with a baby, like after 2 or 3 weeks. I can't fathom how it would get done. So he's going to have as much time off as possible. It's looking like that should be at least a month, but we might be able to really extend it now that the government's announced some, or the different unions have announced some changes to their parental leave policies since the election of the Labor government. So yeah, that's a work in progress, but I'm crossing my fingers that we actually could have more than multiple weeks. We may even have multiple months when he's available. So the kind of other professional supports that we're calling in ahead of time are, last time I recommend this for my clients as well, but there's a couple of different mental health screening kind of questionnaires that you can do to check how you're going. So the standard one that you'd probably be given through a maternity care service is called the Edinburgh Scale or Edinburgh Postnatal. I can't remember the proper name for that. The Edinburgh Scale gives you a score out of 30 to determine where your mental health may be at. There are some really good questionnaires on the PANDA website as well. Different ones for if you're the birth parent, the non-birth parent, if you're pregnant, if the baby's already here. And that can help you if you do those, say, each month, which is what I was doing, then it can let you know if your scores are starting to slide and your mental health is deteriorating, because it's really hard to tell that sometimes when you're just not sure if it's because you're sleep deprived or because some other stress is happening in your life, or it's difficult to know when to seek help sometimes because you think, oh, I'm having a really bad time, but this is just how it is with a new baby, or everything's going so well, I shouldn't be feeling like this. I don't want to waste someone's time. So last time I could see my scores were starting to slide around 3 or 4 months, and I contacted someone who I had seen through, I'd already started kind of dipping my toes into the idea of being a postpartum doula by this time because I had a really great first few months. And through Newborn Mothers Collective training testimonials, I suppose, there was an interview with Katie Parker, and she's a social worker. She's also a postpartum doula. She has a great understanding of matrescence and different parenting philosophies that really align with how I think. And so I had made contact with her and had some appointments then when my mental health was struggling, and she helped me a lot. And this time I contacted her, and this could be any support person for mental health that you have in mind. I contacted her and said, I don't want to wait until I'm struggling this time. I want monthly appointments from the start. So I've had one prenatal session with her, and then we've booked in a secondary visit, which I'm confident the baby will have arrived by then. So that will be my first postnatal visit, and then we're going to speak monthly after that. And because it's a really big changeover and potentially stressful and identity shattering time of our lives, and there's different things going on, this time around we're seeking some sort of professional backup support in terms of emotional and psychological stuff for my partner too, just as a proactive kind of thing. So yeah, I am not getting a postpartum doula in a practical sense, but I have Katie kind of on call and in my back pocket for that emotional kind of stuff, which is where I think my support needs are at. Different people have a different view of what a postpartum doula is and does. And for some, it can be really like they become a key member of the family for the long haul, and they become an integral part of your village for the first multiple years even of your children's lives and mentor and support you through your whole motherhood journey. Others are really focused on those first kind of 6 weeks post-birth in a practical sense. And for me, I think the role of the postpartum doula is to fill whatever gaps you feel are present for you. So if you have family that is far away, your primary support might initially be practical, and then having them help you build your village, for want of a better phrase, link you in with different services, help you connect with other people who are going to help you feel supported through your early years of parenting and beyond. And for me, I have the local support. My family are close by. I have a whole host of friends that I can call on for support. And I really want to stress at this point that if you are somebody who's having your first baby in a place where you know nobody, the people that I'm calling on for support, 90% of those I didn't know when I was pregnant with my first child. These are people that I have sort of accumulated, hunted down, whatever. And I say that in the most loving way. There are people that I met at the beach and our kids were playing and I loved the way that they were speaking with their children. And I pretty much just like forced my phone number on them and was like, we're free on Tuesdays. Do you want to come and play? And this happened in various forms over many times. And I got about five of these women together recently. And we had, most of them are mothers of multiple children. And they kind of just held me through this time of going like, yeah, you'll be okay. You'll make it through. And my first baby was really intense. So the thought of doing it all again, and is still intense, obviously, because 3.5 year olds are still intense. Yeah. See? I can't remember where I was up to. My brain is being wired for nurture, not for making clear, coherent podcasts. Okay. Beside the point. So the friends and people near to us that I'll be calling on for support. The support looks different for each person. This depends kind of on our relationship, their location, and what their capacity actually is to provide different kinds of support. And I think if we recognize that people's capacities may be more or less than what we want them to be, our idealized version of what their support might be versus what their actual ability to support and provide for us is, I think that can save a whole lot of heartache. So there are people who live far away whose contribution has been and will be things like emotional support. Me texting them whenever, any hour, calling them in tears, leaving them a voice message, whatever it is, and them just witnessing me and listening through that and acknowledging, yeah, that's really hard. There'll be other people who it'll be like sending memes at stupid hours too, because I know that they're up feeding as well. There are some who don't particularly have the emotional bandwidth at this point, but have wanted to chip in a little bit of money for my postpartum fund. There are some who are local but don't have huge amounts of time or the emotional kind of stuff. And for these people who want to contribute in a different way, that are saying, well, how can I help you? What does support look like? It's things like, I do have a meal train set up. So that's kind of where the site that I'm using is mealtrain.com. I've just got the free version, and you set up what days you would like somebody to drop food at your house. And I actually included a link to some recipes that are safe for my dietary requirements. I'm going to put the link for the meal train in the show notes here so you can have a look and see what it's like. There is a pro, or if you want to contribute to it, you're very welcome. There's also a pro version that's about $10 to sign up for, and this one you can add extra tasks to. So you could ask people to collect and drop off your laundry when it's done, or walk your pets, or cleaning, grocery collection, whatever it is. So I just have the free one, but that's the pro option. So for some people, they may be able to do a double batch of food and keep one batch for their family and drop one batch for mine. For some people, it's not really possible to do those things. They have their own kids, all that sort of stuff. Support might look like coming to me for a play with our kids in the backyard instead of meeting halfway like we usually would. Or that when they come, it could be the most basic thing. Like if we have library books due back, that somebody will take them for us on the way home. Like, it's little things that are going to make life easier. Some other things that we did first time around that we're doing this time as well is having a welcome sign on our door. And that says something like, welcome to our home and our baby bubble. We really appreciate your company and support for a short visit. This supports both nurture and rest. Please make yourself at home. Flick on the kettle. If you see anything that needs doing while you're here, we'd love if you could help us out. Something like that. So it's basically like reminding them that we're not going to be waiting on the guest, that our house is their house, and a short visit is going to be preferable compared to an all-day one unless we express otherwise. Which also leads into what we kind of did last time and are doing this time as well in regards to close friends and family who live further away. Now, we actually do have space at our house for a visiting people to stay, but I am not comfortable having people outside of my immediate nuclear family, essentially, in my space in those first early days. Like the first time around, the after pains got me horrendously. It was terrible. I am better prepared this time. I talk about that in the episode on birth preparation if you want to listen to that. But there's likely healing to be done. I could be struggling with continence in those early days. I don't really want anyone in my house until my milk's properly in and I'm not feeling terribly engorged. And there's also the part about that this time we have our older daughter who we want to attempt to make things as normal as possible so we don't have a constant rotation of guests in the house, because I know that that disrupts her sleep. I know that disrupts how she relates to us and the kind of behaviors and the emotions underneath those behaviors that she has. So it's going to be a big enough thing without having lots of people in and out of our house. So the way we've gone about this is to say to our very closest families, if the baby comes on, say, like a when, what did we say? If we said if the baby comes on like a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you're welcome to come up for a visit the following weekend. If the baby comes Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'd prefer you to wait until the following one. And I like the reasons that I just listed then on this episode, the recording now, is this exactly the same reasons that I gave to them, because that's the honest truth. We've also asked that those people who are coming and want to come for more than one day stay somewhere that's not our house. So in time, that's fine for people to come and stay. I think we probably had people come around maybe 4 weeks last time, 3 or 4 weeks, where they would stay for a night or two. Can't really remember, but that very early first couple of weeks, I'm not having visitors overnight. So yes, that's kind of the stipulation. They can decide if they want to come, but if they do, they're staying not at our house and they'll be following the same kind of procedure as everyone else, that it's a short visit that supports both nurture and rest. And that's probably fine because they can see me and the baby, and my partner and my daughter might want to go out and do other stuff with them through the day. So it still is kind of a family visit. It's just that it's not 100% of daylight hours with the baby. I said about disrupting my daughter's sleep. So sleep is another thing that we obviously have to prepare for differently this time around than last time. Last time I was quite happy to, you know, very happy to contact nap. We had the co-sleeper bassinet. I did try and get her to sleep in it and in a cot much longer than I should have persevered for, because she was never a cot baby and never will, like never was. And she has expressed to us that she's not comfortable sleeping in a room by herself. She said it scares her, the idea that she would wake up and there's no one in the room with her. So that's fine. That's fine with me. The way we've had it set up for over a year now is that she has a floor bed in our main bedroom. And until the last month, we've never actually had a separate room set up for her. We had a nursery kind of set up for a while, but that was when we were showing our house for potential sale, and it was basically the real estate told us to do it to make it look like a bedroom, which was just so irritating to me because she was sleeping in with me and our sleep was so much better because of that. And I thought, bloody marketing. Anyhow, yes, we have now got another bedroom set up, but that bedroom has been set up with a double bed in it. So it's going to then be fine. The idea is that we've said to her, if you wake up in the night, or what did we say? We said, if the baby's too noisy and keeping you awake in the night, then you and Dad can go and sleep in your other bedroom. And so we've made it nice. We've got her clothes in there properly now. We've got her toys. We've got a couple of posters of different Disney and cartoons and stuff she likes up on the wall. We're just trying to make it a fun place to play and spend time. And so sometimes we'll lie in there and read books. I think she's slept maybe 3 or 4 nights in there with one of us over the course of a month, whenever she chooses to. And otherwise, she's just been in the floor bed as normal. And it really doesn't worry me if both kids end up kind of in that room with us for a while. Whatever helps us as a family to get the most sleep is fine. Now, contact napping through the day and being able to catch up on a bit of nighttime sleep, as I was able to with the first, may not happen so much with the second. Personally, I'm just hoping that these children have completely different temperaments, because my daughter has always been very low sleep needs from the start, and I'm hoping this baby just wants a little more sleep than she did. But we will be embracing the baby carrier for naps. I don't plan to wear the baby carrier walking around until after I've had my pelvic floor physio check, because mild prolapses, uterine prolapses, can be silent, as in there can be no symptoms or sensations, and I don't want to be putting the weight of the baby onto me for extended periods of time. Because you can hold a baby in a baby carrier much longer than you could hold them in your arms, really. So my tolerances will be determined either by pelvic floor sensation being like, okay, you've had enough of this now, or my arms getting tired. Not with a baby carrier until after my pelvic floor physio check. But because of how we've worked the leave differently this time around, I'm hopeful that my partner will be able to take more of the day naps from the start, which he didn't early on. Or he probably did, but because he only had 3 weeks at home, it wasn't really enough to then get confident by the next block of time that he had off, you know, doing one nap a day on the weekends when they're napping 3 times a day across a week. So what's that? 21 naps. Doing 2 naps a week doesn't make you overly confident in it. So I'm hoping that he'll be more able to settle and respond to this baby. And I will happily wear the carrier, and I intend to learn to feed in while the baby's in the carrier this time. I didn't do it last time. I didn't need to, really, but I'm hoping that that will be a good thing. And then I can sort of be on the couch or on the ground doing puzzles and books and that kind of thing with my big kid. And hopefully he and the other people that we have around us will take care of some of that more rough play than that she needs. So the other things that we have been doing to help her prepare and get ready for baby have been sort of drip feeding the setup of the house. So I did the change table first, and we were pretending that she was a baby and I had to change her nappy. We were doing things like looking at the baby clothes and seeing which toys would fit into that, so we could figure out how big the baby was going to be when it came out. So involving her in that process a bit. We're having this baby at home, so she helped to inflate the birth pool when we tested it out. So that was another kind of, we're just doing one thing a week, like making it as gradual as possible, rather than coming home one day and being like, bam, this is a baby house. We put the capsule into the car. This was something that was a pest because we had to swap her seat to the other side, and I really didn't want to. I wanted to keep that the same. But my lanky husband wasn't actually going to be able to push the car seat back far enough when he was driving if the capsule was behind it. So we needed to move her behind the driver's seat, which is really irritating because she can reach the driver's seat with her feet, and that's not ideal for me concentrating when I'm driving. But she's got used to the car seat, the car capsule, sorry. And yeah, that's been a good thing too. We set up her room, as I talked about. We've also been playing some different games. So sometimes she's really happy with, you know, the idea of having a baby, and sometimes she's really put out by it, which is completely understandable. She doesn't know what's coming. We don't know what's coming, really. We don't know how our dynamic's going to be. So I have read the book Attachment Play by Aletha Salter, and it looks at the chapter on the birth of a sibling, looks at a few different types, specific types of play that can help the child process what's going on. So some of those things have been like regression play, so pretending that she's the baby. And I can see that she's sort of doing this and leading us into the games a lot of the time. So, you know, she's toilet trained, but sometimes she'll just, you know, have an accidentally on purpose on the floor, and it's part of being a baby. And or she'll just stop using real words and go back to baby talk, or she'll need to be carried because she tells us that she's a baby and she doesn't know how to walk yet. Her favorite game at the moment is playing what she calls born baby. So we get a blanket and we tie this or hold this blanket around my belly, and she has herself inside the blanket standing up, and I literally have to pretend and make the noises of giving birth and do a squat and or be in different positions, and eventually the baby comes out and she plops down onto the floor and she waits for me to roll her over, and I look and I say, oh, you've got beautiful blue eyes, and I check that she's got 10 fingers and 10 toes and scoop her up and find out what kind of girl or boy body parts she has, and we choose a name, and then she gradually learns to do everything. So she learns to roll over, and then she learns to sit, and then she learns to crawl and learns to walk and learns to run and learns to talk. And when she can do all those things, then the game is finished. But we have to do the whole thing. You can't just stop and start somewhere. So regression kind of play is something that is helping her figure it out and that we can come back to. So it might be that when I'm actually changing the baby's nappy, I might put the change table, which is on wheels. If you're getting a change table, get it on wheels so you can just move it between rooms. It's fantastic. I might pretend to change her nappy on the couch as well. Or she might want to be involved and pass me things for that process. Symbolic play is another one. So we have a little set of like mini bear figurines, and there's parents and a big sister and then a baby. And so sometimes I get the four of those out and she just plays out a little scene, and sometimes the big sister's really caring for the little baby, and sometimes she wants to leave the little baby behind and the rest of the family goes off to the park by themselves. And this book suggests that the idea is to let them play out whatever they would want to happen, rather than being like, oh, that's not nice, you better bring the baby along too. Let them do what they would want to happen. So they're kind of getting the satisfaction of that. And likewise, if the big sister bear is being really mean to the baby bear, you kind of just let that happen, with the idea that they're externalizing what they need to, and then they won't actually be taking it out on the baby in real life. So they're just a couple of them. I think there are some other techniques that they talk about, but that's kind of what springs to mind at the moment. And then we've been using some books as well. So there's a book, I think it's called Hello There or Hello In There, A Big Sister's Book of Waiting, which is kind of getting excited to meet the baby. I know some people do things like having a present for the older child from the baby, and maybe the older child picks a present to give to the baby. That's not something that I'm doing just doesn't really call to me, and I'm not a, you know, gifts are not my love language, so it's not something that really feels pertinent for me to do. And I guess this time around, I'm looking more at kind of being I suppose held by community or held spiritually. I don't really know how to explain that, but I had, after my first birth, which is a physiologic birth, not interrupted, beautiful, and a home birth, I was lying in my bed the next couple of mornings and the sun's coming in through the window. And it just felt like all of my edges, like I couldn't feel where my body stopped and the baby and the room began. Like it was as if only the walls and the corners of the ceiling and whatever were able to hold me in, like almost like I was floating away. And at the time I had this, you know, this most wonderful web of practical support, because I had asked those few people who we had really close at the time for certain things on a certain time frame and according to their capacities, and had their agreement ahead of time and done all the things, like, I don't know, even like pre-ordering groceries and that kind of thing. I'd done it all and I was just like floating on air. But I didn't have the people in my life at that point in time that I felt I could really try and explain this transcendental out-of-body experience to. And in the time since my first daughter's birth, I've come to, yeah, I suppose understand more of the spiritual aspects of birth and motherhood, and have more connections with friends who are geared towards understanding that as well. And so I'm looking forward to being able to voice that experience and have it understood by others, because I also didn't really know very many people the first time around that had a positive birth experience. And having, yeah, made friends who actually have had that positive birth experience, who are doulas, who have a belief in birth, that I feel I'll be able to express that without, to somebody or to multiple people, without having to feel like, you know, that feeling where you're going, oh, I just don't want to say how good this is because I know this person's had a bad run, or I know that person's traumatized, so I can't tell them how brilliant this is. Like, there, I know that there are people who will be able to take and accept and celebrate however I'm feeling after this coming birth. All right, I better check back to my questions here. Okay, before I do that though, this is actually me coming back after the fact to tell you the things that I forgot about when I recorded first time around. So a really important thing in my postpartum care this time is continuity of midwifery care. So I did have what's considered continuity of care with my first pregnancy as well through the midwifery group practice, but through the public system, even the best continuity of care programs finish at 2 weeks. Now, because I'm with a private midwife this time, as I described in the previous episode, I actually get support from her with weekly visits, more regular in the first week, and then weekly or fortnightly visits up until the 6 week mark, which is wonderful. So she will have followed me through my pregnancy, the birth, and the postpartum period too. There are some ceremonial kind of self-care things that I'm doing as well. So first time around, I did do some belly wrapping. It just feels really supportive and lovely. So I may do that again this time if I feel like I want some extra support in that area. If you're going to do that, Don't get ones that are like just a corset around your middle, because your body is not a tube of toothpaste and all that's going to do is put extra pressure on your pelvic floor. So if you're going to look at belly wrapping, whether it's a more traditional or a more modern kind of format, then make sure it's one that covers over your hips as well. So hips right up to the rib cage. I will be having some sitz baths or steaming, which a sitz bath is basically like an extra little pot that sits inside the rim of the toilet bowl, and you can put some herbs and Epsom salts and things like that in there and sit on the toilet and bathe your tender bits. And yeah, that can be a good way to go to clean yourself without rubbing or using a washer or soaps or anything like that that could be irritating early on. I also have a naturopath that I can call on. I have some proper like quality breastfeeding and postnatal supplements from the health food store that I'll be using that worked really well for me postpartum first time around. And I am having my placenta encapsulated again with Oxytocin Collective in Newcastle. Not everybody's up for that, and some people want it in smoothies. So I'm somewhere in between. I found the tablet form quite fine. There was no taste, no weirdness. I just took them. Particularly, I'm generally prone towards low iron, so that, and I felt like there was some hormonal benefit for me as well, having the placenta encapsulation first time around, and I'll be doing that again this time. And the final thing that I'll be doing to support myself is some gentle movement. So there are various schools of thought. I used to be an exercise physiologist, so I know how the general exercise or fitness industry views postpartum, which in a lot of cases is with not too much care or an expectation that you should be ready to do more than you actually can early on. So there are some movement protocols that are described in both the Postnatal Depletion Cure by Oscar Serilac and The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson. Both of those are really good books if you're looking at optimizing your health postpartum. And then there are also some other kind of movement programs that I might take a look at this time as well. So Empowered Mother is one of those. And also core and Floor Restore programs as well. So I might take a look at each of those. Given my background, I really do know what I probably should be doing. But sometimes it's just nicer to have somebody tell you what that thing is and step out a plan each day. So it'll mostly be things that are really gentle, like lying with legs up the wall, little movements of hips and core muscles and breathing exercises and things that take only 10 minutes or so each day to do, and gradually building up how much I can walk. I know early on my partner asked me to get something from outside, and I thought about how far it was to do that and come back again, and I was just like, no, I actually can't walk that far. And it was an evening, and I was maybe already like a week or two postpartum, and I couldn't deal with just that little round trip in our own backyard by that time of day. So just I'll be doing what my body can handle and not much more. All right, on to the question. All right, the next question was about what supports are you calling in personally or professionally that people might not have considered. So I think I've covered quite a lot of what we're doing already, but one thing I haven't touched on is the idea of protected sleep and also the need for actual baby care from others this time around. So first off, protected sleep. I mentioned before that I had plenty of time to contact nap with my baby in the day if the nights had been rubbish, first time around. Now, this time I can't necessarily guarantee that that's going to happen because there's another baby in the house. A baby, another big kid in the house. It might be more difficult. So one way that my daughter's grandpa and grandma who live locally are going to be really helping with this time is not only coming to play with my daughter here, but just taking her out for a while so there can be quiet time. And in that time, hopefully, when the baby is fed, the baby will go to my partner and I'll be able to have some protected rest time. Now, I've never been a day sleeper, but if you're really tired enough, you will somehow sleep in the day. I would put on the same body scan kind of meditation on my Insight Timer app every time that I was going for a sleep or going for a lay down. And sometimes I would get to the end of that, but most of the time it would be familiar enough and I would go through the routine of putting my like heavy eye mask thing on and I would fall asleep and I would get 2 hours of sleep, and that would be at that point it was usually my best block of sleep for the 24-hour period. And I would do that at the time that the baby was happiest to be with someone else. So yeah, first time around, that was between 5 and 7 p.m. When her dad got home from work and we'd fed and we'd kind of connected as the three of us, and then I would go to bed. And so this time around, it will have to be probably at a different point of the day. But yeah, having hands on deck for protected sleep time as a regular thing. Now, some people are going to need more sleep than that. I am like my daughter, and my sleep needs are probably on the medium to low end rather than the high end. Some people are going, particularly if there's postpartum mental ill health happening, probably going to need more sleep. Or if you're recovering from a traumatic birth or an operative birth, you're going to need more sleep for physical healing too. So some people, as we've had on this podcast before, look at overnight support for their babies and they bring them in just when they need to be fed or they choose to bottle feed. But my protected sleep will be more like I choose to be a responsive, like I choose for primarily me to be the one responding to the baby in the night, which means that I need more support from other people during the day if sleep is bad generally or going through a rough patch. The other thing that is different this time is that I really wanted support with practical things and company and listening and that sort of stuff in my first postpartum, but I really wasn't that interested in giving anyone else care of my baby. I wanted to hold her, I wanted to bond, I wanted to feed, I wanted to baby wear and co-sleep and all of those sorts of things. This time around, I am really conscious that I'm going to miss my big girl and the time that we have just the two of us. And as much as she is driving me up the wall at the moment, I'm also aware it's the last little bit of time that it's going to be the two of us. So I will be more willing this time, I don't know how this will play out in real life, to give the tasks of, you know, my partner did nappy changes a lot of the time. We took the approach whenever he was home that I was looking after the top end with milk and he was looking after the bottom end. But yeah, nappy changes, playing with the baby while they're awake, so that I can still have some one-on-one time with my daughter, because I honestly think she's going to punish me behavior-wise if she doesn't. I can see the difference if I arrive to kindy like an hour later than what I say I'm going to, and can really give me the cold shoulder and make it very unpleasant for the next day or so until that passes. And yes, we use play and different things to help move through that, but she's just a strong-willed individual like me. So yeah, so sleep important, and aware of it this time. So last time I knew that the first or the fourth trimester, those first 12 weeks or 3 months, was going to be hard for sleep. I just had no concept of what it was going to be like after that. If you want to hear about our sleep journey more, I have done an interview on the Beyond Sleep Training podcast where I talked about my very sparkly little child and our journey with sleep. But yeah, I just didn't realize how long haul it was going to be supporting her sleep. And if I had, I think I probably would have prioritized more about having that protected sleep and having more support so I could sleep as a general thing rather than just as a like when I hit rock bottom, reaching out for help at that point. And rock bottom comes multiple times. Like, probably not if you have a major crisis in your mental health, then that would be your rock bottom. But in terms of exhaustion for me, the exhaustion rock bottom point happened multiple times and at different developmental stages. And now that I'm aware of that and also acknowledging that I'll have two through the days and through the nights, the sleep factor is going to be more and more important too, as well as, you know, proper food and warm hands and loving touch and making sure that my partner and I are actually in our relationship instead of parenting beside each other and passing as ships in the night and not really checking in, that we're actually, you know, our teamwork is great, but our communication on things that are not parenting or the general running of the household can sometimes slide. So yeah, trying to be in our relationship and making sure that we have the support that we need to be able to do that as well as possible. And the last question that I was asking everybody else is, if you just want your postpartum to be better, different to the cultural norm, if there was one piece of advice that you could give, what would it be? And I'm honestly a bit stumped by my own question. I think it's just the big theme for me at the moment is that it will be okay, that it's okay to ask for support, that it's okay to arrange support ahead of time. Like as much support ahead of time as possible. We've had this advisor that's always said, the more insurance you have, the less you need it. So I'm putting in place as much insurance as possible for our physical and mental and whole family well-being as I can. And that it's not a frivolous kind of investment. Just because other people around you aren't putting their time and thought and efforts into crafting whatever the best possible postpartum is for them, doesn't mean that you necessarily have to follow that trend. If it's your first baby, skip making a beautiful nursery and invest those funds somewhere else. Unless you're planning on selling your house, because apparently the real estate agent tells me that's where it's at. And I think when everything is in place like this, it gives a feeling of opportunity and growth and potential for joy and love and excitement. I think without putting these structural things in place, or like, I suppose the riverbanks of the structural supports in place, then I would feel like the river's just spilling all over everywhere and that I was totally out of control and scared about what was coming. Whereas having done this work, I feel really, like I don't think I'll ever feel fully prepared, but I feel really hopeful and optimistic. And that's the feeling that I really hope that you take into you or your clients take into your birth and take into your postpartum as well, and that you kind of have some bearing on like when things aren't going to plan, that you know where to contact quickly, that you don't second guess yourself going, oh, it's not that bad, it's like I don't want to waste their time. Because as somebody who's been a health professional before and continue to be a doula now, there is nothing worse than sitting at your desk doing paperwork, knowing that somebody out there needs you but thinks they'd be wasting your time. So yeah, put yourself in the important position, because I can guarantee that if there is another call that comes in that's more urgent than yours, they'll call you back and say, I'm sorry, I'll have to reschedule by an extra day. There's just been an emergency call come in. And you'd go like, okay, I can deal with that. I can deal with one more day. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's me. That's a lot of talking. I hope you've really enjoyed this season of the podcast. There may be another episode. There may not be. I'm not sure. I am going to be off on my own maternity leave until probably April. If you are local around the Lake Macquarie, Newcastle kind of area, keep an eye out on my social media or newsletter around that point in time. It looks like I'll be starting to run some in-person circles where I can bring my beautiful new baby along. So that and the online stuff will probably happen first. You can still grab my book at any stage, particularly in the lead up to Christmas. Great Christmas gift, wink, wink. And my downloadable self-publishing e-guide for the budding authors out there is always available on my website as well, as is the recording of the latest Beyond Mum Guilt workshop, which was very well received. So yeah, in-person doula services on hold for the foreseeable future. If you're really keen to have me around second half of 2023, let's chat. But otherwise, yeah, I wish you a beautiful, supported experience over the next few months, wherever you are in your parenting or life journey. I'll speak with you soon. Thanks so much for listening. If you love this episode of Anna Asks, it would be a great help if you pop across and leave us a 5-star rating or review. This helps other parents and people to find us and join in the conversation. You can also become a sponsor of this pod for $2.99 Australian a month via the link in the show notes, or head to my website www.annacusack.com.au to grab my free postpartum preparation e-guide, check out my services, or grab my book, Mama, You're Not Broken. Until next episode, bye from me, unless of course you want to come chat via socials at Anna Cusack Postpartum.